Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I'm your host for The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share advice for techies, for earth lovers, and for penny pinchers. As much as I love the sound of my own voice, this broadcast is going to rely heavily on guests who are subject matter experts on everything, ranging from how to get your small business up and running, interviews with some of the brains behind your favorite apps, and even how to remove garbage from outer space. You never know who's going to pop up and join me next in studio, so make sure to subscribe to The Town Hall on iTunes to get our episodes downloaded directly. And if your boss is making you work through lunch or your commute is just too short and you miss something awesome, don't worry, we've got your back. You can check out our blog for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. Today, I am joined in studio at Rubicon HQ by Jasmine Crowe, the founder of Gooder. And if you haven't heard all of the amazing stuff Jasmine's doing, Gooder is an app that is fighting the good fight against hunger. So Jasmine, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
So before we get into all things Gooder, I did want to rewind a little bit. So tell me a bit about your background and kind of what sparked your passion for sustainability, for philanthropy. Take me through your timeline a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. So my background has definitely been in that social impact space. For about the past 10, 12 years, I've been working primarily with celebrities to kind of define their giving blueprint, if you will. So I would help them start their nonprofits, find their board, do their fundraising, execute their programming. And I loved it. But one of the things I started to see is that a lot of my clients were very much seasonal givers, if you will. So I was extremely busy around Christmas and Thanksgiving and back to school. But the rest of the year, we wouldn't be doing much. And so I remember one time we were giving away like all these turkeys, and I just saw all these families. And I said to my client at the time, you know, these people that we're giving these turkeys to, they're going to be hungry next week, next month. I mean, you're not just hungry only at Thanksgiving. And at that time, I decided to start doing my own initiatives, if you will. So I started creating cause campaigns. And I mean, they ran the gamut from setting up giving boutiques where I would bring in homeless children and let them go back to school shopping, to helping against domestic violence, sex trafficking. But really, the thing that pulled on my heartstrings the most was really hunger. And driving through downtown Atlanta one day, I saw all these people that were homeless, and I decided to go home the next day, you know, made a spaghetti dinner, posted on Facebook, like, hey, I'm going to feed downtown if you want to help. I had about 20 volunteers, and we fed about 100 people. And I just started doing that every 2 weeks for about 3.5 years, turned it into what I called the Sunday Soul pop-up restaurant, where I would rent tables and chairs and linens and actually print out menus and let people sit down and dine with dignity, if you will. And when a video of one of my restaurants went viral, people all over Facebook were like, this is the most amazing thing. Who's donating the food? And it was no one. I was literally couponing and price matching and having to go to 4 or 5 different grocery stores, farmers markets, Sam's Club. And I started to think, wow, why is no one donating this food? That's when I started researching food waste, was just really blown away. Like, I just couldn't believe it, because we literally had these two problems that could solve each other. And that's what got me started with Gooder.
So that brings me to my next question. Like I said, the solution that you created is an answer to, you know, a couple large problems going on. One, the food waste impact on the environment, obviously, and two, the social issue of hunger in the community. So when the food isn't getting picked up and donated and isn't allotted a second life, it ends up in the garbage. Mm-hmm. So can you share any, you know, just off the top of your head, statistics that will kind of help drive the point home? What's happening to our environment when we throw out our food?
Definitely. So one of the biggest things, Amy, is that food waste has actually doubled. So when you think over the last 40 years, we're talking food waste has increased, now accounting for 27% of everything in our landfills today. And why that's really important is as this food sits and it rots, it gradually produces methane gas, which is, you know, harmful on our environment. It's one of the worst greenhouse gas emissions, and it's leading to global climate change. So a lot of times people will say, how can it be summer, winter, spring and fall in Atlanta in 1 week? And I'll say, like, this is global climate change. Food waste is a direct correlation to that. And so it is terrible on our environment. And so I like to think with Gooder, we're helping people breathe easier, even if they don't know that.
I love that. And what about the social impact? You know, what are some things that people may not know about hunger, you know, in their own backyard in Atlanta, for example.
I think, you know, I use myself as an example here. I had been feeding members of our homeless community, like I said, I mean, for 5 years at this point. But for 3 years, when I learned that one of my friends, someone who was college educated, married, you know, had led a successful career, was struggling with hunger in her home. And that was, for me, like the day I saw the light, because I think a lot of people assume that the only people that are really suffering from hunger may be, you know, people that are homeless or, mm-hmm. you know, homeless veterans, or you may think seniors or children that are getting free lunch and breakfast in school. But the reality is that the face of hunger is gradually changing every single day. I mean, on a drastic level. And one of the things that makes me extremely sad about it, I don't know if you saw an article came out, I want to say like 2 weeks ago, and it was saying like now $117,000 a year was considered low income in California.
That's unbelievable.
So you think, you know, yeah. it is. It's really unbelievable because yeah. probably 10 years ago, $117,000 a year was like a really good middle class, strong middle class family earning.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so now that's considered low income. And the reality is food is typically the first to go. So people are going to always make decisions like, hey, I've got $100 left and I need that extra $100 for my rent, or I need it for medication, you know, whatever it is. And now they're making a decision between paying for food and paying for one of their other bills. And a lot of times people will say, I could go a night without eating.
Right.
You know, I've had people tell me like, yeah, I had sleep for lunch. And I'm like, you know, we need people to eat. So hunger is probably the worst problem right now. And I think it's only getting worse as we continue to have this growing population. Food waste will get worse, except for Gooder coming in and kind of helping to reduce it. But hunger is getting just continuously saddening me.
And people aren't talking about it.
People aren't talking about it, I think, because it doesn't affect a lot of the people that really control the narrative. You know, mm-hmm. it's something that they've never experienced. And people ask me all the time, like, Jasmine, were you ever hungry? Did you grow up hungry? And the reality is no. Like, you know, my parents, I grew up, both of my parents in the home, working middle class family, two college educated parents. Mm-hmm. So I don't recall not eating. But at the same time, it's because of that, I believe that no one else should have to go without. Because it's like, why would you go without eating? No one should ever have to decide if food is a necessity in their household. And too many people do. So to give you some statistics on the numbers, for Hispanic and Black children, we're talking 1 in 3 will go to bed hungry tonight. For children collectively, it's 1 in 6. Senior population of hunger is continuously growing. So we have about 42 million people that are living food insecure in this country. And statistics are saying that when you consider undocumented immigrants and just other populations that maybe the census data didn't catch, we could be up to 50 million people in this country.
I love what you said in your TED Talk. It really stuck with me. And it's, you know, it's exactly what we were just talking about. Hunger is not a scarcity issue. It's a logistics issue.
It is.
So will you elaborate on that a little bit? Can you walk me through kind of the business case for Gooder?
Exactly. So what we think of is we have these businesses that have all this food, right? And so they're throwing it away. Some of them are trying to do the right thing. They're composting it. But Amy, it's good food. So I believe composting is an amazing option, but I think it should be for the food scraps and everything else,
right.
but not for you throwing perfectly good pans of chicken that people could eat into compost. And so you have all these businesses with this surplus food and you have all these people that need it. But now it's like, how are they going to connect? How are they going to get it? And so the business doesn't want to take it to the nonprofit. They also don't want to have a lot of nonprofits coming to them. You're understanding, how are they going to package it? How are they going to label it? You know, they definitely are concerned sometimes about that liability. And so here we are with Gooder. We come in and we call ourselves this, solving what we call the surplus food supply chain problem. Mm-hmm. And we are helping businesses that have this surplus food connect it to people that need it, but all while allowing that business to be able to track, account, and of course, earn from their donations.
Right.
And so we inventory everything it is that business sells. At the end of the night, when they have surplus food to donate, it's as simple as pulling up our app, clicking on those items, telling us the quantity amount. Because we know their ounces and their food costs and their fair market value costs, we're able to tell them the tax value of that food as well as the weight. And we deliver back to them a lot of sustainable initiatives that they could use. So we could tell them how many gallons of water they've saved, how much carbon dioxide and other methane gases they've kept out of the environment. We're able to tell them how many cars could be powered from this, how many homes could be powered from this. And it's just very tangible information that they need. And I'm hoping that as they see that, they'll constantly have the food waste impact in the back of their mind and they'll waste less.
So how do you partner with a restaurant? You know, what does that pickup process look like?
Yeah, so right now our customers are large venues. They have a lot of food in one location. And we're looking at rolling out a few services for smaller restaurants. But when we were thinking about really how can we be the most sustainable company, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't think that it made a lot of sense to have a ton of vehicles on the road, similar to like an Uber or a Lyft. All these vehicles going and getting 10 pounds of chips or 10 pounds here when we had so many people in need. So I decided to concentrate kind of on this top-down model. So our customer, our largest customer to date is like the Atlanta airport. Mm-hmm. And so we work with all of the restaurants in the Atlanta airport. So there's 175 restaurants, there's sky clubs, there's retail locations, all that have food. And on a nightly basis, sometimes just from one terminal, we can get 2,000 meals, 3,000 meals from one terminal. And it's really, really good food. So we just onboard restaurant by restaurant in the airport. We have a small training process. We take a 21-90-day approach. So we know that this is habit changing. You've always been throwing this food away. Now we're going to package it and we're going to label it and someone's going to come and pick it up. And we spend that first 21 days very high touch with them. And after that, we believe 90 days, it can become a lifestyle.
And then, so the food gets picked up, it gets packaged. Where does it go now?
Yeah, so we have about 834 nonprofits in our network here in Atlanta, but we try and keep the food as close as possible so that the food travels efficiently as well as safely. And so we will pair whichever customer we have. When we onboard them, we're pairing them already with anywhere from 8 to 15 nonprofits, and it kind of goes on a ticker. The customer has 500 meals. These are the three nonprofits that they're paired with that could take that, or we can split it up and take it to these five nonprofits. And so we just pretty much deliver it that way.
And how long is the process from picking up the food from the airport, let's say, to getting to the nonprofit to someone eating it?
Yeah. So airport's a little different because we're in the airport at night. Mm-hmm. And so the food goes to the nonprofit right away. So as soon as we leave the airport, it goes to the nonprofit, but they may not eat it until the next morning.
Right.
With some of our customers like Turner Broadcasting Systems, that pickup time is 7 to 9 minutes. So we're actually getting the food to the nonprofit quicker than a pizza. So we're really excited about that.
Oh, I love that.
So yeah, that process, like if we're picking up anytime before 9 p.m., we're taking directly to the nonprofit. And a lot of times, the nonprofit is about 5 to 7 minutes away, even with Atlanta traffic, which is a really fun thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, especially, yeah, that's right on Techwood. And
yeah.
Just zipping it down.
But there's so many nonprofits in that downtown area.
Yeah.
You know, there's Atlanta Mission, there's Gateway Center, there's, you know, the Veterans Empowerment Organization. And there's, you know, the saddest part is we pretty much will get on a high end. We can have about 400 nonprofits register, new nonprofits that we haven't been able to serve yet. So that's really what I'm working towards is the need is so much greater than the supply right now. But the supply is there. It's just mm-hmm. getting more customers to see the business case in it. We look at it as a triple win, right? So win on the environment, you're reducing your overall waste. We're keeping this food out of landfill. Win on the community, right? We're empowering the community. If you cannot eat, I always think back to that Snickers commercial. That is so real. And so if you can imagine 42 million people are going to go to bed hungry tonight, and they're going to wake up tomorrow really wondering when and where their next meal is coming from. Mm-hmm. And these customers that we're working with, they have the ability to change that narrative for so many people. So I think winning on the community is amazing. But we're also helping them save a lot of money, too. So, you know, food is heavy.
Yeah.
And so when you're a restaurant or you're a business, you have to move that food fast. I think that's the great thing I love about Rubicon is that you guys have helped them measure that. But a lot of times these businesses that have a lot of food, they don't want it to sit on their property because it's going to attract rodents. You know, people have told me it has attracted dumpster divers. They've actually had people going and, you know, searching for food in their dumpster. And I've said it's probably because they know you're throwing away good food.
Yeah. It's a
compliment. Like that's really what that's about. So, you know, we're helping them save money by reducing their overall waste plus getting tax credits. So a triple bottom line.
I think that's, you know, that's an incredible feeling to kind of be able to do the win-win-win. So at Rubicon, we love tech. We are a bunch of tech nerds, you know, sitting in this office. So let's talk about the logistics of the tech.
Yeah.
It's a blockchain technology,
yes.
Right? So how does that work? Because when I think blockchain, or, you know, when I used to think blockchain, everybody just thinks Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You know,
we're not issuing any coins.
Yeah.
Not so yet, at least. So for us, Amy, the blockchain was used for us as a verification metric, right? I always use this example. Have you ever been in a grocery store and they've said, hey, do you want to donate you know, a bag for $4 to feed a family of four or whatever.
A lot, yeah.
A lot of times.
Especially around the holidays. You're absolutely
around the holidays,
right.
They do that. But then if you really think about it, how do you ever know where that food goes?
No clue.
Like, you have to just sit back and hope in your mind, and you're like, hey, yeah, it's going, I'm doing the right thing. But the reality is the food could stay in the grocery store. It could go to one location and not many, never even make it to families. And so what we wanted to be able to do is tell our customers, hey, we wanted to show like a bulletproof chain of custody, if you will. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, this is the time that you enter the food for donation. This is when Gooder received it. And then when the nonprofit receives it, they sign for it just like they would a UPS package. And because we already have all the tax data and the way data in there, donation letter is auto-generated into our customer's platform as soon as that nonprofit signs for it and verifies that they did receive the food that they've received. So that's one of the things. We wanted to have that verification tool. But the other part was we're saving customers a lot of money in tax donations. And so I wanted to make sure that if the IRS ever came to them and said, hey, how are you guys writing off $2 million in food donations? Now we have this secure ledger, and it doesn't allow the customer to go in and fudge the numbers. It always creates a new record. So they can never say that day we donated 100 pizzas, go and put an extra zero so we can get a larger tax donation. It'll always create that new record. So those are kind of, that was my thinking when we first brought it on. It's protection and verification.
So, you know, besides the incredible feeling, obviously, of doing good for both the people and the planet, we touched on this a little bit, but I wanted to dive a little deeper. There are really cool benefits, analytics, and data for the restaurants.
Exactly.
You know, what can, when restaurant or when a restaurant group or a big client kind of signs up, what can they expect to receive? What do they see on the app?
Yeah, so they're seeing the items that they're wasting the most, which is really good.
That's
so
really interesting.
I think it's, and people will say like, hey, well, do you think that you'll ever work yourself out of business? And I will say that a lot of the customers that we deal with, there's really no sense of predictability. If you're in the airport and you're 1.5 million people are moving through the airport on a daily basis, you're constantly going to just produce food because you have so many passengers coming through. You can't predict that flights will be late. Right. That flight people are going to skip right past those restaurants and run to their gate. So you've produced a lot of food to meet the need, but sometimes the need just doesn't come. We see the same thing with convention centers, but at the same time, we're able to give them analytics on the items they're wasting the most, the items they're wasting the least, so they can see what's popular, what's not.
Yeah, is there any theme? Like, do a lot of clients waste the same thing?
I would say yes. I would look at, I was looking at one of the client orders that came through last night because I'm such a geek. I just, even though I'm not, I've fired myself from that position of picking up the food, I still like to see what's being requested.
Absolutely.
So I'm always looking. So last night, I think that I saw like turkey chow chow, and I've been seeing that lately a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, that must not just be a popular thing. But I think what it is what is chow chow? And so people probably just don't know what that is. So I think now it's the opportunity for the restaurant to even explain it. And we helped one of our customers, we were able to show them that they were wasting like this chicken Caesar wrap a lot. And what they started doing is they ran a special on it. So now they just were able to inform their customers that they even had it because people consistently were ordering the same thing. It's a really big chain. But we've seen that. We definitely see that there is a trend. We will see that soups in the summer, for example, they make a lot of them, but no one's really ordering soup. Or so we'll see those kind of things. I think the thing that gets me the most excited about the food that we do recover is that it's really healthy. And so when you think of the fact that not only are we fighting hunger, we're actually helping people have access to more nutritious food, which is just exciting.
There's a buzzword going around right now, especially in the community of people that are trying to help, you know, the greater good, and it's food desert.
Mm-hmm.
And for those listeners who may not know what that is, or may not even know if they're even like living in one, how do you define a food desert?
I look at a food desert as being in close proximity to good food. So being in, are you able to get to either a Publix or a Kroger, even a Whole Foods, whatever it may be, that actually can sell to you healthy food produce? And a lot of food deserts exist in and around, not only in Atlanta, all over the country. I could drive through parts of Atlanta and just stop and look for a grocery store and be 3 miles away, 4 miles away. And why that's so critical is people, a lot of them, you know, don't have vehicles. Mm-hmm. And so you would think 3 or 4 miles isn't that far. But what if I don't have a car? What if I'm going to have to be on the bus? How long is it going to take me to even get that 3 or 4 miles? And then if I do walk it, take that 45-minute walk, how many groceries can I actually bring back? And so, you know, there's a lot of food deserts here. I think the city of Atlanta, you know, they have a program called Grows a Lot. We've been working with them where they're letting people turn abandoned lots into urban gardens and, like, you know, producing fresh fruits and vegetables. But that's a start. But there's still so many other things that people really need that grocery store for. And so we believe that we are eliminating the transportation barriers. It's something I spoke about, you know, in my TED Talk, and I'm really passionate about it, is we've got to get food directly to people. And so we're being very unconventional with it. We're not only giving to nonprofits. I mean, we take food into senior homes, into veteran centers, after school programs. We want to figure out, how do we get food right to people and not just do the same thing that's being done?
How many people do you work with? You know, how many people are on the team that are kind of dispersing and picking up? And it kind of, it sounds, you know, and I think you said this somewhere, but it's Uber Eats in reverse.
It is. It is kind of an Uber Eats in reverse, with the exception that now we're focused on these bigger guys. With that being said, I don't want to lose sight of that, because I do believe that we're going to probably be in that mode to work with these smaller restaurants really quickly. So that's to come. But right now on the core team, there's six of us. Mm-hmm. So six of us on, like, our core team. And so we're small, but we're mighty. But we have a lot of our do-gooders that are like the ones that go out to the airports, to the convention centers. And that team is much larger, anywhere from 20 to 25 people.
So can you sign up to become a do-gooder? Can you?
Yeah, I mean, we hire. So, you know, we don't have volunteers. I always like to tell people that. So we are consistently hiring for do-gooders. In fact, we're hiring for some right now, because we're going to be extremely busy for the Super Bowl. So we're hiring a lot of do-gooders.
That's amazing.
We're excited about that.
That's awesome. I would be remiss if I didn't take the time to talk about, you know, in addition to obviously this prestigious podcast, all the awesome press that you've been getting lately, you know, it's including exciting. That interview and $25,000 donation from my celebrity crush, Harry Connick Jr.
Isn't he such an amazing guy?
Yeah, so but isn't sweet. He so cute? Also, he's such an you know, how has all of that been for you? How is kind of the whirlwind of, you know, 2018 has been your year?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's so exciting. So tell me, you know, how's that been for you?
I mean, it's been, when I think of the last year, like, we literally got our first big major customer like May of 2017. So, you know, we're literally like, I think of us as being a little over a year old. The press is amazing. You know, I wasn't even expecting all this, and it came. And I mean, we had a video that went viral the other day. It had like 35 million views. So now we have, you know, my email box is full, and people are calling me, like, getting my phone number from 411. I had no idea. Like, this lady called me. She's like, hey, I got your phone number from 411. And, you know, I really want to help. And I love what you're doing. One of the things that I think has been really sad to see is how many people are reaching out that are like, hey, I get what you're talking about. I'm hungry. You know, my mom was eating cat food. These things were happening. And so it is depressing sometimes, because it's seeing how big the problem is on a global scale and how many people are reaching out. But it's exciting to see that this is something that people are excited about, that we're, you know, we're being innovative. We're new. We think that we're disrupting, you know, what has been with traditional food banks and, like, Feeding America. And I love them. You know, I really tried to work with them when we first got started with Gooder, and it just, you know, didn't happen, but we're doing something different. And I think that seeing the press come through for that is exciting, because it means that, hey, this is something that we want to at least give a chance on.
Right.
And it's a blessing.
So before I get to my final few questions, I wanted to play a little game with you.
Okay.
This is a very popular segment, because it kind of, you know, as an influencer, you know, as a sustainability, as well as a philanthropic influencer, you know, we've talked a lot about the business, but I want to learn a little bit more about you.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask you 10 rapid fire questions.
Okay, this is so much fun.
And
am I getting nervous? Not really.
No, you're blushing a little bit, but we're going to just say the first thing that comes to your head, and then I'll go from there. So, Jasmine, what does your morning routine look like?
Laying in bed for a few minutes and pushing snooze. And then we have our Slack daily stand-up. So it messages me, like, literally right at 8 a.m. And then I'm responding to that.
And who's the last person that you texted?
Terrence, one of our people on my team, founding team, texted him this morning like, hey, we need to get to New York.
What is your go-to favorite meal?
Ooh, Lately, I'm like really obsessed with kale salads with too much dressing, which is bad.
They have a very good kale Caesar at establishment in Midtown.
Okay, I'm going to check that out.
What is the first concert that you went to?
First concert that I went to, probably New Kids on the Block. Yeah, I think that was my first concert when I was like 11 or 10, 10 or 11. Yeah.
What is one piece of advice that you've heard in your life that you carry with you?
Plan your work and then work your plan. So, you know, putting everything down on paper, pen to paper, and then working that plan.
I love that. I'm going to steal that. When you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Definitely thought I wanted to be a teacher. Just always loved kids. And I actually thought I wanted to be a special needs teacher at one point.
Who is one person that really inspires you?
Oh, wow. There's so many. I would say Oprah. I mean, I know that's super cliche, but she's an HBCU graduate just like me. And she went and she did everything, you know, and I really am inspired by her a lot. And then my dad, I know that's corny, but my dad is just like such a good person and I'm in love with him.
If anyone dead or alive could play you in the movie of your life, who would you cast as yourself and why?
Wow. Dead or alive. Oh, wow. Let me think. Who's a really great actress? I like Regina King. I think she would be really good as Jasmine Crowe. I think she's a good one. Or I like Kerry Washington, too. And Scandal is like my favorite show.
You kind of look like Kerry Washington.
Oh, I will. That is really. Yeah. Okay, thank you so much. I'll take that. I mean, you're really making me blush now.
Where's your favorite vacation spot?
The Caribbean. Anywhere in the Caribbean. I mean, I'm an Aquarius, so I just love to be by the water and I love the sun.
Lastly, what does success mean to you?
I think success is how many people you bring with you. That's how I measure success. It's not so much about what I accomplish, but how many people I can help reach success as well.
So what's next for you? What's next for Gooder? Let's talk a little bit about where you see, you know, this going. Are we going to expand out of Atlanta?
Absolutely.
Do we have a timeline on that? So
it's fun stuff. So we, you guys are like the first to hear this. Our next city launch is actually Los Angeles.
Wow.
So we're really excited. It's a big jump, but we think that, you know, we've had a lot of meetings there with the city and the county, and the city of LA is on a much more sustainable wave, if you will, yeah. than Atlanta. And Atlanta's just been, it's always home. This is going to be where our HQ will be. But LA is just a good market for us to get to. We have relationships already in place to get a lot of food from film sets, from grocery stores, and have created some amazing partnerships with the nonprofit community. And one of our team members is actually already there in LA, kind of helping us launch there. So we want to be in 20 cities by the end of 2020. So that's our goal. So it's going to be pretty rapid. We just closed our seed round of funding. And the goal of that funding was actually to get us out of Atlanta. So it was like, hey, not only can we continue to build Atlanta, because we haven't touched a lot of businesses in Atlanta yet,
right. But
we also want to launch in another market. So 20 more cities by 2020 is the goal. And then I'm definitely thinking international. I mean, that's the great thing about what we do is these are problems that are needing to be solved everywhere. So every city, every country, every little small town, no matter where you think of, there's someone that's struggling with hunger. And people will say, oh, not in Beverly Hills. Trust me, there's people who are struggling to just keep their house in Beverly Hills. And they are making those same decisions that I spoke about between, hey, am I going to pay for my rent or am I going to pay for food?
So before I let you go, where can people find you? Where can people find out more info about Gooder? Where can people kind of follow the journey, help get involved, apply for jobs?
Definitely.
Let's do the plug.
Do the plug. So Gooder, we are GOODR.co. That's our website. And you can follow us on Twitter at The Gooder Co. We're on Instagram and Facebook at Gooder Co. as well as LinkedIn. And then, you know, stay in contact with me. I'm like always looking to build relationships with people in this community and people that really care about sustainability and care about the green story, if you will, that we're trying to tell. And I'm Jasmine Crow on everything.
Amazing. Jasmine, thank you so much for being here. This was so fun.
You guys are so amazing. I love Rubicon.
Well, we love Gooder. Thanks.
Thanks.